he suggested that I try taking testosterone. And it didn't take very long for me to decide that was a good decision. 17. Yeah, at 17, yeah. It didn't take very long for me to think, this is a great idea. and that's exactly what I did. I started testosterone at 17.
Was there a noticeable difference?
Yeah. I mean, I went from maybe 95 kilograms, like 110 in 2 months. So it was a night and day difference. A lot of that being water retention. I was a blowfish, super bloated. But I loved it. I felt so much bigger. I felt so much stronger.
Larry Wheels, thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me in your beautiful apartment.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it? I'm enjoying these evening settings. It's a little bit different to the daytime. Do you like my Putin table as well?
Yeah, I mean, without these headphones, I literally wouldn't be able to hear you on the other side of this table.
I was debating whether to get another table, but I was like, oh, I'll just deal with this one. It's all right.
It helps fill the space. It's great. It's tasteful.
Yeah, man. How's life? Everything good?
Yeah, better than ever.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
I hear you are going to be leaving Dubai soon.
Yes, so we're jumping right in. Yeah. That's right. I have plans in the February, March timeframe to go to LA. Last time I was there was in winter of 2018. Then I had various back-to-back opportunities that made me feel that LA wasn't the right place to be at that moment. And I'm very glad that I did leave, because right after I moved to LA, I got to move to Iceland for 2 months and train with Hafthor, which was the most exciting time of my life. That was the best training I've ever had. Just every single session was so electric. I mean, if I could relive that again, I would. Mm-hmm. Highlight my lifting career. And then I came to Dubai right after. But going back to LA in a couple of months for various reasons, one of them being my forever home. I want to buy a forever home, which I believe is going to be LA.
Also forever home. That's where you're going to be for the rest of your life.
Well, at least that's what I think right now.
Okay.
For rest of my life is a pretty long time.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, where would I stay the longest? Mm-hmm. Because I'm now engaged.
Oh, yeah, but congratulations on that.
Thank you, sir.
Your fiance is actually here in the living room, sat on the sofa.
That's right, yes.
It's a shame, actually, because I wanted to bitch about her for 30 minutes, but now we have to be on our best behavior now.
I mean, you can still bitch about her right now. I mean, she has thick skin. She could take it. So, yeah, now that I'm engaged and I have every intention to have a family, that means one or two kids, I want to have a home to settle down in. And see, as beautiful as Dubai is, I've always wanted a house on a hill with a city view, and you just can't get that in Dubai, right? Mm. It's all flatland here. So in LA, that's very attainable. Even on, by LA wealthy man standards, it's still attainable on my budget. So I feel like I finally saved up enough. I can make it happen over there. And also breaking into the network of rappers, NBA players, athletes in general, TikTokers. I mean, they're all in LA, right? It's just the place to be to grow my brand.
Yeah, and I think you're at the point now where you've done everything you could possibly do in Dubai.
Absolutely.
Like, you've taken advantage of all the gyms, all the people that have come in and out, a lot of the people in fitness, the strongmen, everybody in the area. It's kind of, I'm in a similar situation as well, where I feel like, what else is there to do? I'm enjoying myself here at the moment, but I feel like maybe it'll be a base for sure, but will it be my forever place? I don't know. Like, I don't know if I can see myself having kids here.
Where else would you see yourself living, having children, settling down?
Spain's always a good vibe.
I haven't been to Spain yet. Well, no, I've been to Barcelona. Yeah.
Spain's good, but Spanish. I need to learn Spanish.
That would help.
Yeah. That would help. But, I can only speak one language, so. What's the situation going to be with, taxes and stuff? Because are you benefiting from not paying tax here at the moment?
If only.
Oh, no, because you're American, aren't you? Yes. Americans can't get out of that.
Yeah, we're just fucked everywhere we go. We're liable to pay federal income tax no matter where we live in the world. We do get $150,000 tax-free on our income earned outside of the U.S., but, you know, if you make more money than that, you get taxed the same. You get taxed in the same bracket as if you were living in the U.S. using U.S. services. So I don't get any real benefit beside that $150,000. I mean, for, I guess, most people, that's enough, but well and beyond that. So I'm not benefiting from paying taxes living out here. Mm-hmm. So at least I'll feel better about paying them living in the U.S., using your services.
I guess that's why you don't really see that many American people living here.
Yeah, there's no incentive. You know, yeah. I get it from the UK. I mean, you guys, you're tax-free after 3 months. If it was tax-free living here, I would be living here.
Yeah.
Forever. There would be no real incentive to go back to the States, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, going back to the point where you said, I've exhausted all of my content opportunities here in Dubai, you're absolutely right. The people that regularly frequent Dubai, I've collaborated with all of them. People like Andre Dayu, Joe Sedex, these guys. I've worked with all of them, Mo Vlogs, and several occasions. So besides that, the market that I'm attracting by being in Dubai and the followers of the people that come here that I'm trying to gain from, it's not really North American followers. And those are the people that I'm trying to market to with my products and services.
Yeah.
So it's just not really lucrative in any shape or form for me to stay here. And I want to go where the money's at, right? I'm young. This is the time for me to set up for my future, for my children, and create generational wealth. And I don't feel like I'm doing that here.
How old are you at the moment?
28.
28, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. I remember at one point, I think I was like 29 or 30, and you being 4 years younger than me, it just seemed outrageous because you were just like absolutely massive.
I was a behemoth.
Yeah.
Yes. Now I am no longer such. I feel much better now. Much, much better. Yeah. I feel like I live a lot longer too.
Yeah. I mean, facially, you look healthier. You're breathing normally. Probably not farting as much as you used to be.
Oh, I'm still farting just as much. Yeah, you can ask my fiance over there. Yeah. I had a few stinkers over on the way here.
So where did it all start with you? When did you actually get into lifting? Because I know a lot about you, and particularly everything you've been up to the past 4 years, but I don't know anything about your earlier years. So where were you born?
Well, I was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, and I didn't pick up lifting until I went to St. Martin, which is a French Dutch Caribbean island south of the U.S., and I spent about 2.5 years there.
How old are you at this point?
I was 14 when I moved there.
Okay.
And see, I couldn't go to school there because I didn't speak French, I didn't speak Dutch, and there was only one English school on the island, and it was private. We couldn't afford it. So the only option was to learn these two languages, wasn't going to happen, or go to this English school. Couldn't afford it. So I had nothing but free time, some bullying, couldn't take advantage of because they thought...
Wait, you were doing the bullying or you were getting bullied?
I was getting bullied, so...
No way.
Yes, I was
Were you like... A late developer.
Absolutely. Yeah, late developer. Also, in the States, I didn't deal with any bullying. I was almost like the class clown in the States. I was always the person trying to make everyone laugh, have a good time. I mean, I was usually loved by everyone. That was never something I had to deal with in the U.S. But when I moved here, see, I was a target because they assumed, because I was from New York City, not just the U.S., I was wealthy, right? And the kids on this island, they thought that, okay, if you're from New York, you have money, so they just look to me to take the money that I would have, like my spare change, literally my spare change. And there was a language barrier as well, which it didn't help me making a connection with any of them. Mm. Very few of them actually spoke good English. They didn't have to, as it was a French and Dutch island. I was living on the French side, for those who are curious, living in Grand Cas. I actually lived in a great location with like right on the beach. It was a really tiny island, though. Mm-hmm. And the reason we left was because, I mean, my mom was working as a waitress. She couldn't really afford it. She didn't have any opportunity there. And thankfully, she came back to the U.S. I did not want to settle down there. It felt like I was going to be stuck there if I were to stay there. She took me back to the States. And before I get too far ahead of myself, the reason I started lifting was because of the bullying and because of the free time. Okay, so I was too young to go to a gym. You had to be 16. I was 14. I gathered some cinder blocks from around the neighborhood. Which was everywhere. There was constant construction going on and a broomstick. Put that together, made a makeshift barbell. And for a 14-year-old Larry, that was more than enough weight. I didn't need all the plates in the gym. Got a pull-up bar set up in my door frame and I made it work. I used YouTube to educate myself on what exercises to do. And I just did biceps and chest every day.
No way. Similar to me, I was doing push-ups and the ab rollout for my very early days. And it's a similar situation. I got into lifting because I got mugged on a bus. This was in Leeds. So these two guys, I think it must have been 15 or something. Like I was puny, but I was always shredded. Like I had a six pack, but I was puny. Anyway, I got mugged, felt like really useless and helpless. And I was like, I need to stack on some size or do something. So I think that was one of the reasons why I kind of got into it.
That's a pretty extreme motivation.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of us who get into the gym life, it does come from a dark place, you know, but I think those of us fortunate enough were able to make something positive out of it.
Yeah.
You know, so it was 15 when you started lifting then?
No, it was 17 when I started. So 15, I was playing rugby, but I didn't really know like what to do with the gym or like where I should go and sign up to one. But it was 17 when I first bought some equipment, got a bench, some dumbbells, and that's when I started. Inconsistently, and then I joined my first gym when I was 18.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So when you were in this island, it was just you and your mum, no dad?
That's right.
Where was the dad?
Dad was out of the picture since I was two.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Deadbeat. To this day, we still don't speak. We have attempted from both sides to enter each other's lives, but he is just not stable. Last time he came, he was drunk. You know, he's asking me for money. And I was 18 at the time, teenager. Mm. Like, okay, this is not the kind of influence I need in my life, especially he hasn't been here this whole time. I was not trying to be his parent, you know, and I just wasn't looking to take on that kind of responsibility because he was a mess. You know, he wasn't the kind of person influence I needed in my life. And see, had he been there for me growing up, I would have felt differently about that. You know, for example, my mom, she's always been there best as she could. So I'm happy to help her out, you know, to my best of ability. Mm-hmm. You know, but with my father, to his defense, and I totally understand, not sure if I agree with it, have me in my mind about that, but he was very, very young when he had me. I think it was like 18, 19 when he had me. So any 18, 19-year-old is not ready for a child. and he just felt it was too much responsibility, and, you know, he decided to leave. So he hadn't lived his life yet. He didn't get the chance to. I mean, when the baby comes on, I haven't had the children yet, but I imagine your life gets turned upside down, like all your priorities shift to embracing a child. And someone that, you know, isn't even old enough to drink yet isn't ready for that.
So. Yeah. Well, it's pretty messed up that there was an attempt for you guys to meet and he was drunk.
So yeah.
A good start. But, yeah. Oh, well. You moved back to New York. This was after you'd been on the island.
That's right.
Right, yeah.
Moved back to New York.
Yeah.
In the city. And I spent a lot of time in the Bronx and Washington Heights.
Were you at school at this point?
And yeah, so as soon as I came back, I went to school. I was several years behind from not being in school when I was in St. Martin. So I had to get a GED. And that's where my education stopped.
What's a GED?
It's a general education diploma. It's like a high school equivalent. Mm-hmm. That's what I had gotten as soon as I came back after I realized I didn't want to spend. So I would have graduated if I continued on that path when I came back to the States at like 21 or 22 from high school. Mm-hmm. Right. Normally you graduate from 17. So I was way, way, way behind. It was ridiculous. So let me get my GED. It took me a few months. And then I went to community college to try and study criminal justice. I didn't know what to do with myself. But luckily, when I was, this happened quite a few years later, but when I was 21, I discovered how to monetize my social media. I skipped a few things that happened in between.
Yeah.
But I didn't actually end up using that GED for anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was curious to know, when you started lifting weights, or at least when you started going to a proper gym, did you notice that you're pretty damn strong compared to everybody else?
Not quite, because I started so early. So when I actually joined a proper gym, I was 16, and I did feel like I was already lifting what most of the gym rats in there were lifting. Mm. There was a few freaks of nature at that time. But they were far and few in between. Most of the guys in there were just as scrawny as me, just older. Mm-hmm. And I was lifting, I would say, just as much. But see, what always interested me was getting strong, because it didn't take long for me to feel comfortable in my own skin. I just wanted to get strong so that I felt like, as you stated, you felt like you weren't helpless. Mm-hmm. Didn't want to feel vulnerable. I wanted to feel strong, like I can defend myself if I needed to. Especially living in the rougher neighborhoods in New York City, like Washington Heights and Manhattan, or the Bronx, where I stayed and spent a lot of time. Never wanted to be seen as an easy target.
Did you have a good group of friends there, or were you more of a solo wolf?
I had friends as like one at a time. I had best friends that I rotated, and meaning like at one stage of my life when I was 18, I had a best friend. I'd see him every single workout. We'd do everything together. And then he ended up falling victim to some harsh recreational drugs and ended up getting homeless. And at that time in my life, I didn't know how to help him. So we ended up distancing ourselves. And then another friend I had, BTC, came not too long after that because I was searching for a workout partner. And then last year he passed. So I never had a group of friends I would hang out with. Always just be one person.
Mm-hmm.
Always had to be like a best friend I'd go and do everything with.
I feel like when you have a good training partner, like you, especially someone who is at a similar level to you or maybe more advanced or stronger, like that takes your lifting progress to the next level.
Absolutely. And, you know, ever since I stopped having these training partners, for example, the one I told you about that I have when I was a teenager, or BTC who passed, training isn't the same when you're training with people you're not as comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
See, these people act as like hype men and they know you almost better than you know yourself. It's just a different vibe when you have a training partner that you stick with for months or years at a time than training with people that you're not so comfortable with. You know, nowadays, when I make content, when I make workout videos, it's a new person every time and there's no connection there.
You know,
it's interesting to learn about people from all different backgrounds of training and see what they're capable of and exposing, you know, like diamonds in the rough. For example, Andrew Jack is just one example, or Khalid for arm wrestling. It's really a privilege to be able to see these people firsthand and give them the platform that I have so that they can get the exposure they need.
Literally, some people can just go on your videos and that puts them on the map.
Absolutely. And that's what I love about it, you know. And I hope my platform keeps growing so I can keep giving people these opportunities because there's some really extraordinary people out there. And that's why I'm never concerned about how many followers they have before I collaborate with them. I'm like, okay, well, what are they capable of? That's what I want to know first. Secondly, they're like, okay, they have a big following. Great. If not, it's not important.
But it's like that guy, is he called Ellie? The one from Cameroon.
Yeah.
The massive arm.
My God, yeah.
Like his physique is crazy.
It's incredible. Yeah.
And that video's got like 1.5 million views, isn't it?
Yeah. Rightfully so. Yeah. He's got a million on Facebook, though. I wouldn't say he's a diamond in the rough.
Yeah,
he's definitely really well-known in his country. And I'm actually looking to go out there before I leave Dubai. I want to go to Cameroon because I've met...
you want to train at that ghetto gym he trains at?
That's right. Oh, yeah.
That's cool, to be fair.
Oh, yeah, man. Yeah, and also I want to see, because he said there's so many strong guys and crazy-looking bodybuilders, and I believe him. They have some incredible genetics out there.
Yeah. So... Was the main platform you started on, was it Instagram?
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Because I'm trying to think back to when I first got to know about you.
I think it was through a mutual friend, Don.
Well, I think even before that, I'd seen some of your, like, the videos on Instagram when you were just, like, lifting these crazy weights. And that's how you, I guess, started to blow up.
That's right.
Is that right? You were just, it was, nobody else was really doing that.
Exactly.
Because of your overall weight. Like you were lifting weights like that a powerlifter would be lifting, like twice your overall weight.
Yeah, what I think made me so popular is what I was lifting, the way I looked doing it. Looked like a bodybuilder, and not a freakishly big bodybuilder like Ronnie Coleman or Phil Heath, where you look at those guys and you expect them to do it. I was only at 110, 115 kg when I was blowing up. So I was about the size I'm at now. And I think my physique was more relatable than the huge open pro bodybuilders that we see today and also at that time. So they didn't expect me to be capable of doing these things. Also, I was always shredded. And I think that was something that people just didn't think was really possible, to be lifting what I was lifting, the way I look doing it, being super shredded. Because they always would say, well, if you're on a diet and you're shredded, you got to sacrifice your strength to do that. And I never did.
Yeah.
Right? Never went away. And that's because of the PEDs I was using, right? I was using the right PEDs that would stimulate both your physique.
Oh, yeah. So, okay. At what point did you decide, okay, I'm going to dabble in some substances? Real quick, guys, I just want to share with you something which I spent the end of 2023 putting together for you. You see, in life, if you are unhappy with something, you need to change it.
That is one of the core philosophies that has driven me, my businesses, and my fitness over the past 10 years. In recent years, I've been asked frequently how I've managed to go from being an average personal trainer, working all day, every day in a gym in the north of England, to the position that I am in today. That is why I decided to create the Digital Playbook. This is a step-by-step blueprint for anybody who finds themselves in the same position that I did years ago, wondering to myself, how can I make money online? Can I really make a full-time income from creating content about the things that I actually like? How can I travel the world, work from my laptop, and at the same time still afford to live a great lifestyle? It's essentially a playbook on how I built multi-million pound businesses off the back of creating content online. If you want to check it out, head over to thedigitalplaybook.net and you can book in a call with my team to find out more. Let's get back to the episode.
Yeah. So see, when I was 17, the friend that I was my workout partner and the person I spent all my time with, see, we would party everywhere, right? We would go out every other day. I was experimenting with drugs at the time. I tried all the drugs, had a lot of fun doing it. But I realized that he was going down a very dark path. I could see it in him, right? He was changing before my eyes and it was just getting worse and worse. And of course, naturally, so was I, because I was spending all my time with him. And he suggested that I try taking testosterone. And it didn't take very long for me to decide that was a good decision. 17. Yeah, at 17, yeah. Didn't take very long for me to think, this is a great idea. and that's exactly what I did. I started testosterone at 17.
Was there a noticeable difference?
Yeah. I mean, I went from maybe 95 kilograms, like 110 in 2 months. So it was a night and day difference. A lot of that being water retention. I was a blowfish, super bloated. But I loved it. I felt so much bigger, felt so much stronger. It was just a big transformation.
You didn't worry about any of the negative consequences? You're just like, no, I'm doing this.
Well, I did, but I chose it as like the lesser evil. Because the way I was going, I was just going to end up homeless, like my friend was. Mm-hmm. I don't know where he's at today, if he's doing okay or not, because he's not active on social media. But if I continue down that path, it was only going to be even worse than abusing PEDs, right? It was a lesser evil. I chose my poison. It was going to be either alcohol and drugs or PEDs. Because once I started PEDs, I no longer had a sip of alcohol. I didn't do any recreational drugs at all. I didn't smoke weed every day for like 10 years. But I didn't see that as a hindrance to my progress or my goals, because I was able to achieve all these world records while smoking every day, right? Yeah. But when I came to the bottle, that stopped, even smoking. But at that time, lost my train of thought. But yeah, I got to answer your question.
So, but what would you say, or what advice would you give to other youngsters who are in a similar situation to you, 17, 18, 19, and they're thinking, oh, I want to hop on the juice as well?
Right. So I think first off, you have to understand what your goals are and how serious and committed you are to achieving them. If you're looking to be the next Mr. Olympia, if that's how big your ambition is, then you do need PEDs. Mm-hmm. The sooner you get on PEDs, the sooner that you do everything in your control to make it there, the better, right? A lot of the greats today started very, very early. And that just gives them more time to get where they want to be, right? You do have a shelf life of being in your prime, being healthy, being able to tolerate these substances. But if your ambition does not lie at being number one in whatever you want to do,
like if you just want to get in shape.
If you just want to get in shape, right, then it is absolutely unnecessary. no doubt, being on PEDs does give you an edge, right? No question about it. You can get away with eating dirtier, with not calculating your training, like not being on a training program, still making progress, 100%. But there is a price to pay. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to pay that price. You can just take your time and to put in the extra effort it takes to do it the natural way. Because if you're 17, 18, your test levels are likely going to be through the roof, the highest they're ever going to be in your life. There is a chance, though, that you're the outlier where it isn't. And that's when, if you're 17, 18 watching this, it won't hurt to get your bloods done, see what your testosterone levels are at, and make sure it's in the normal range. Mm-hmm. Because it's possible that you could be a teenager with low testosterone, struggling to make progress, doing everything right, not understanding and realizing that you actually have low testosterone because of your genetics. And that's a deficiency. That is a problem. Then even as a teenager or young adult, you could be prescribed TRT if you naturally have low testosterone levels.
Yeah. So right now you've kind of walked away from that. You're on TRT, but just that's it at the moment.
That's right. Yeah. And see, I'm content with the goals I've achieved in fitness with PEDs, because now when I set my goals, I don't want to think, okay, well, if I bump the dose, I can get better results and do what I want to do, right? Because that's always been the answer. It's like, okay.
That's a slippery slope, that one.
Exactly, right? I have a 410 kg deadlift. I want to get to 425. Well, I can just take more of this and I'll get to there. That doesn't feel right. It's not satisfying.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel good inside. It feels like cheating at that point. It feels just that is fun, right? But I know deep down that it's the substance getting me there. It's not me. It's not because of my discipline or because of my work ethic that I'm able to still get these results. But regardless of the fact, it was satisfying to a point. But I think as you mature, as I have, I'm not with the same mentality that I had when I was 18, right? 10 years ago when I started.
But particularly at your age as well, like, and after watching all the, like, the crazy weight that you lift, I just think surely there comes a certain point where you get a bad injury, like an injury that really messes you up.
Well, with perfect technique, it's really, really lowers that likelihood of it happening. See, the injuries I've ever sustained, there was always a reason behind it, like improper warm-up. I rushed the workout. I didn't sleep well the night before. My technique got sloppy. I got too amped up, too much adrenaline, too much ammonia, too much slaps on the back, right? And I would forget about proper technique and just try and muscle the weight up, and that would get hurt doing it. Or I'd attempt the PR too early in the programming because I'm impatient. You know, all this stuff is in my system. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to kill some weight. And I don't want to wait 3 weeks until my coach says to do it. I want to do it right now because I just want to feel good. Mm-hmm. So I'll go and do it anyway. And again, a lot of the times I get lucky and I won't get hurt or I won't miss the lift and I'll actually get it. But also there's times where I'll get hurt from trying it too early. I'll miss the lift because it was too early. Like, it's a slippery slope, right? But when you're on TRT, what I love about it more than anything, of course, it's the healthy longevity approach, but it's very consistent. There is no roller coaster. There is no, okay, after this 8-week cycle, I'm going to crash. And then I got to rebuild from where I was before the cycle started. It's just consistent, right? I want to see where I can go on TRT because TRT is something I can take indefinitely, right? It's not compromising my health.
Yeah.
And I want to see where I can get without adding any other compounds in the mix, just testosterone at a TRT level, right? How far can I get? How, you know, can I maintain this size and strength I've gained over the last decade without compromising my health?
It was always interesting watching people train with you. Even I've trained with you a couple of times. And when you say, oh, yeah, we're doing bench today, I'm just like, oh, well, I'll be lifting about half the weight that you'll be lifting. Maybe even less than that. But I know my limits and I know, right, I'm not doing this. But it was interesting to see a lot of other people in the industry try and keep up with the weight that you're lifting. And I think quite a lot of people got injured. I think the most notorious one was the Ryan Cowley incident. Like that was an injury, a horrifying injury, which was seen by everyone. Yes. You know, it was so bad that he literally built a career off that.
Yeah, he's still carrying the momentum to this day.
Yeah.
And I was fighting. I saw that immediately. I saw the opportunity. I saw so many doors open up the second it happened. I'm like, this is actually great, right? He didn't see it that way, right? He was devastated.
You know, but before he did that, did you not think, I don't think you're going to be able to do this?
Well, see, he did 180 kg before that, and it flew up, no problem. Right. And what I didn't know is that he had an existing injury that he wasn't sure if it was recovered or not. Right. See, all these, that's actually a major factor in why he got hurt that day. The more experience you have in training, the more educated you are, you'll know what will get you hurt and what won't. Right. And he just didn't know. You know, if he knew better, of course, he would have never attempted it that day. He would have felt it's not worth it.
He was, how old was he? Like 22 or something?
He was young. Yeah, 22, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I've done dumber mistakes. It's just I've been lucky, you know, at that age to not make a serious career-threatening injury like that. In his case, I think it was what made his career. He's carrying that momentum and that traffic to this day. But his chest doesn't look the same.
Yeah.
And still, there's other doors he can, there's other paths he can take. It doesn't have to be bodybuilding.
Who's the person that you've collaborated with that you were most surprised about in terms of their strength, where you're like, yo, this guy's strong?
His name is Khaled, and he's from Cameroon.
Khaled, oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, his very first ever bench press, he bench pressed like 160 kg. I mean, for the first time in his life, without it being on any PDs or anything.
What?
He's an absolute freak of nature. I've never met anyone naturally without training this strong. He's just ridiculous.
There's another guy. I think he's in New York. You follow him, and he follows you, and he lifts like some.
Oh, yes, Dream Swole. Yeah. Dream World. Dream Swole.
What's his name?
Dream World. We don't chat much, but yeah.
Yeah, I feel like he's got. I mean, that's crazy strength.
Yeah.
I feel like he's stronger than you.
On something, for sure. Like, he does some squats without his hands.
He didn't seem to have blown up, though. I don't know why.
Well, that's the thing now, right? Like, timing is everything. Mm. Yeah, I just happen to do what I was doing at the right time in the industry. If I were doing what I was doing 10 years ago today, I would not have the success that I did.
Yeah.
Right? I was doing it at a time when no one else was doing it. The stuff that Extreme World is doing is being done by others, not quite with as much weight as he's using. But I think right now, and for it's always been the case, that the bar is constantly getting raised. Mm-hmm. And I think people are a bit desensitized to 300 kg, 400 kg.
Yeah, that's the problem now. Everyone's seen everything.
Yeah, right.
Did you get to a point where you thought that you just had to keep constantly doing more outrageous things, outrageous lifts.
Yeah.
Because you were like, well, I've already done this, so I need to shock people by doing something else.
Exactly. And see, you know, that would be the main number one reason why I'm on TRT. Because that shock value, you know, constantly having to outdo yourself, you know, that gets old really fast.
It's not sustainable.
It's not sustainable. I'd be so burned out. I'm not burned out, but I'm getting close to that point. Like, if I were to keep on going at that path of, like, just taking more to get more and to shock people and say, hey, and here's another PR, it's not getting me any additional wealth. I'm not creating wealth from hitting PR to this point. Like, I've already built a brand. It would grow slightly more by hitting more PRs, but if I pulled 502 kg, it's not going to get me another 10 million followers and millions of dollars, right? Like, I'm not getting any real incentive from pushing myself to those limits anymore, right? At the time when I was doing it and blowing up, I was blowing up, right? Now if I hit a PR, I mean, people are like impressed and they respect it, but I'm not getting any real incentive like I used to, where I was getting a lot of traffic, a lot of eyeballs on me. I was getting tons of followers from every single PR. I was growing like at a really good rate, but now it's not the case.
Yeah.
So there's no real incentive aside from proving it to myself, which I know that I'm capable of doing certain numbers that if I were to do them, as I said, it's just really unhealthy, not worth it, not worth it. Now that I'm starting a family, totally not worth it. And I'm focusing more on the business side of things and evolving as an entertainer, influencer, fitness influencer. Yeah. I'm evolving and understanding that that's not why people follow me anymore. It's not just because I've hit some PRs. You know, they're not just watching me now because they're waiting for another PR. They understand, like my audience, the ones who've been with me since day one, they're maturing with me and they understand that there's more to a person than how much weight you can lift.
It's the same with me as well. Like you build your brand and people like you because of your personality and you're very honest and open as well. And you've improved like massively in front of the camera. I remember when I think we first met, it was into like 2018 when we were doing the skydiving.
Right.
And we were both like pretty new to the whole social media thing.
Exactly.
And you're very good with your words now, which is impressive. At what point, as you mentioned earlier, you realized you could monetize this? When and where were you?
Well, I have a pea brain, and if it wasn't for my coach John Gaglione, yes, it's very small and there's a lot of space in my head that doesn't get utilized. So my coach John Gaglione, I give him so much respect and love because he was the person that set me on the path to get me where I'm at today. He realized that he was working with a gem.
Mm-hmm.
I was a gem at the time, right? And he saw the opportunity. At the time, I was working as a PT in Equinox, really fufu shishi bougie gym in Manhattan.
No way, I did not know that. Because I've trained at the one in London.
How'd you like it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a nice gym.
Oh, yeah.
I can't imagine you being there.
Yeah, I would, if you came to 50th and Broadway, I would have handed you a towel while you're on the treadmill. Here you go, sir.
But Equinoxes are all over New York, aren't they?
That's right. Yeah, all over New York. Not sure if they all over the country, but all over New York. Yeah. Really prestigious gym, full of white collar businessmen.
Yeah.
I totally fit in, right? Me being this big with a extra, extra small skin tight painted on blue t-shirt. Yeah, I really did fit in. So I was, you know, making like pennies on the dollar there. Not.
And yeah, they take a chunk of your.
Majority of it. Yeah. So this was the time when he's like, yeah, you know what? We should sell ebooks. And okay. I was like, okay. I mean, I was like, why not? Let's try it. I was not opposed to the idea at all. I was making, you know, what's funny is that at the time, I didn't feel like I didn't have enough. Mm-hmm. I was content with my lifestyle. I was happy. And the idea of making more money was cool, but I wasn't really that driven. But what made me that driven and made me see that potential was John. He said, okay, sell these ebooks. We're going to put it online. Put a link in your bio. Let's see what happens. And it exploded. I remember making some really good money straight away, like from day one. And I quit my job.
How many followers did you have at that point?
About 200K.
Okay. Yeah.
But it was a 200K that I acquired very quickly.
Yeah.
So a lot of those 200K followers I had gained in the span of like a year or two. So the engagement was really high. People that were interacting on my page were coming, I guess, every day because I was getting maybe 20, 30,000 likes at the time with 20K followers. And yes. I was really relevant, you know, in powerlifting specifically, because that's when I had just started competing and making myself known to the public as a powerlifter. And so people were like watching me and see what I'm going to do next. So when I dropped programs, it made so much sense, right? And because I was the only one at the time doing what I was doing, being lean and lifting really well as a powerlifter, you know, people just picked up my program left and right. It was selling super good. And what the person that really made me understand my potential is Bradley Martin. He saw me out in Zoo Culture and he saw how much I was getting paid from one of my lifting gear sponsors, right? It was, out of respect for the company, I won't name it, right? Yeah. But they were giving me $700 a month. Right. And when I told him that, he was like, are you serious? I was like, yeah.
And you're like, yeah, it's amazing, right?
I was like, this is great. Like, what? Is there something wrong with that? Did you expect less? Or? at that time in Zoo Culture, this was maybe a year, maybe two after I started working with John Gaglione, I had maybe 500K, right? I was exploding at this time. And he's like, well, you should do that yourself. Like, just make your own merchandise, make your own accessories. And I was like, well, how do I do that? And then he'd help me figure all that stuff out, right? And you can imagine there's a lot more than $700 I started making straight away. And to this day, I still have my brand PR, you know.
So that's like, I guess, is it like a fulfillment company where they do all of the boring, annoying stuff?
That's right, yeah.
Would they take a cut of the profit or something?
That's right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But with that said, I mean, it was infinitely better than...
Well, that's what I do as well. Like, you don't want to be wasting your time trying to go to look at factories when you should just be making more content.
Yeah, exactly. Allocating your time, I think, is really important. And it seems like you figured that out. So,
yeah.
Taking a cut, I mean, it's okay that you can book more time and energy on doing what you love to do, right?
So you had the ebooks. You started to get the merch. Was it just accessories first, or did you start doing the clothing as well?
Actually, I started with clothing first.
Okay.
And then not too long after, maybe 2 months later, started accessories.
Mm-hmm. And did you have sponsors as well at that point?
My sponsor at the time, I think I had a supplement sponsor, which also dropped. And the thing is, that's your sponsor. Mm-hmm. And that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And were you doing YouTube at this point?
I was, yes. I just hired Adam Silver, StrengthNet, full-time. Because of the ebook success. So with the ebook success, I was able to afford him full-time. And I invested in my YouTube channel. I knew if I had his skill set combined with my talent, we'd have a lot of success on YouTube.
Yeah, you two, you're a good partnership. Like, you work very well together.
Absolutely.
He films. Obviously, the quality of the video is very good. He edits.
That's right.
Does he come up with the ideas as well?
Occasionally, he can kind of take the back seat with that stuff.
So who comes up with some of the ideas? Because I noticed you've been extremely consistent over a long period of time. Like, you're pumping out 3 videos a week, 4 videos a week.
Yeah, and it's mostly me, to be honest. Occasionally, I have an arm wrestling idea. See, that's his passion. Adam will live and die for arm wrestling.
If you go into B1 Banus gym and there's like a little guy walking around getting you to arm wrestle, it's probably Adam.
He'll say, "You're a little bitch and come prove yourself to me." And that's what gets you on the table. Yep. So good luck with him. He's not easy.
So he was the reason why you got into arm wrestling.
That's right. Yeah. He introduced me to a guy called Travis Bajan at an expo in the US. And I got manhandled. Being strong, thinking I'm strong. I thought it made all the difference on the arm wrestling table. Little did I know.
It's technique, isn't it?
Yeah. Also, there's a lot of small muscles in your forearm, like your pronator, and all kinds of muscles in your forearm that you never use unless you're an arm wrestler. Yeah. And these arm wrestlers, this is all they care about and all they train for. So they have muscles developed that are stronger that no other athlete in the world would ever train.
Yeah. And it's pretty unbelievable how this is just, it's opened up a completely different avenue for you.
Yes.
And some of your most viewed videos have been the arm wrestling ones.
Exactly.
I didn't even realize it was so popular. I was like, what the hell?
Yeah,
like,
me neither.
Everybody loved it.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at the demographics of the people that are viewing these videos, which are getting loads of views, are they based all around the world, or is it like a particular region which is obsessed with arm wrestling?
There are some regions in particular. For example, there's Europe, UK, US. See, these are the demographics that seem to like it the most. But India, you got pretty much my existing demographic for powerlifting, and people that are interested in feats of strength also are interested in arm wrestling because they see it as a feat of strength, a test of strength.
It's like the ultimate kind of showdown between them. You either go in a ring and fight each other or you have an arm wrestle.
Exactly. I think I was playing Elder Scrolls, a game that takes place in medieval times, and The Witcher, and there's arm wrestling. Yeah. Like, it's been around since forever, right? Arm wrestling is everyone's arm wrestling. But exactly. So when I started seeing results, results are addicting. I'm addicted to results. When I see results, I saw these videos getting millions and millions of views, and it's really easy to orchestrate an arm wrestling match.
Yeah.
Right? I'm like, okay, let's do more of that, right? Because as you said, it opened up an entirely different audience. And I've monetized it now with events. So I've had 5 arm wrestling events that are pay-per-view with great success since a year ago. And I have another one coming up in March. So it's also in another avenue to create revenue. And it's something that I actually came to fall in love with despite it being lucrative. I didn't have that intention from the beginning, right? So when I first discovered arm wrestling, it wasn't until like 2 years later that I figured out I can actually make money from it. And that, I think, is one way that is guaranteed to help you find success is when you can find something that you're passionate about and you love to do. And if you can pursue that with all your time and effort, you'll eventually find a way to monetize it. And that's where you actually be the most successful at, because nothing else will make you work harder than what you love to do. Mm-hmm. Like, I was in school for criminal justice trying to be a police officer because that was what I thought I would do to get the bills paid, but not because I wanted to be a police officer. I just wanted to make money and get the bills paid and have some security. Mm-hmm. What I really wanted to do was lift weights.
Yeah.
So I did what I really wanted to do. I pursued that, find a way to make just enough money to do what I love to do and what I was passionate about. And then that same passion drove me. It gave me the mindset and the drive to do whatever it takes to be successful at it. Mm-hmm. And then later on, money starts coming in and it allows you to keep doing what you love to do. But if I wasn't making no money from arm wrestling or getting views, I would still be doing it.
Yeah. So when you made sort of the transition to get more into arm wrestling, did you notice you had to put maybe the other lifts and focus goals on the side? And like, how much time does it take up the arm wrestling prep?
Right. So if you're preparing for a match, you'll be arm wrestling in the gym, like with some various exercises about 2 to 3 times a week. And then you'll have weekly or bi-weekly practice with a group. But if you love to do it, you'll make time for it, right? So I made time for it and I worked around the inflammation that you will get from arm wrestling, mm-hmm. Which you'll find mostly in your brachialis alongside this part of your arm. and on the inside of your elbow, you'll get some inflammation. See, this inflammation can be prevented with proper arm wrestling technique, managing intensity when you're going to arm wrestling practice, and when you're bench pressing. If you're feeling that inflammation, which you will, right? If you're training hard, you have to use an elbow wrap.
Yeah.
Preferably a PR. Sorry, shameless plug. And see, no, seriously though, but if you don't use these wraps when you're bench pressing after with this inflammation, it's impossible. I just can't bench. It's so painful. I mean, if you've arm wrestled with Adam or anyone.
Yeah, well, you see, every time I've arm wrestled, I have zero technique. And afterwards, my elbow feels like absolute trash. Yeah. In fact, there was one time, this is one of the reasons why I don't do arm wrestling anymore, even when people challenge me. I was in Austria with my dad and a load of his friends, après ski bar, everybody was drunk. And there was this Austrian guy arm wrestling people in one of the corners of the bar. So all the, like, my dad and his friends were watching him, and then they looked at me and they're like, go on, like, you give him a go, like, you'll beat him. And I was like, all right then. So got down, started arm wrestling him. He was actually really fucking strong. And I had a few drinks as well, but I was like, I can't let this guy beat me. So we're battling out for like 20 seconds. Anyway, I finally managed to get him down. Everyone's like, wait, and I was like, yeah, okay, that was great. And I was like, oh. Next day, literally couldn't even bend my elbow. Like, it was so much pain. And I don't think I could properly do a bicep curl for 6 weeks after that. Like, it was that messed up. And obviously, the main reason behind that was because it's just zero technique.
Exactly.
Like, technique is so important. What three key pointers, very quickly, could you give to people that want to have a stronger arm wrestle?
So the best way I can simplify it is, if you don't have an arm wrestling club to attend, you're a lone wolf. You want to be the guy that would just beat everyone that ever challenges to arm wrestling, or just fall in love with the sport from watching my videos or wherever else. Pronation. So the muscle that makes your hand do this. The number one. Yeah, that's the number one most important muscle. It runs somewhere along here in your forearm. Yeah. Right, depending on your anatomy as an individual, it may change. But for me, it's like alongside here. I don't know if you guys can see that.
That massive piece of meat on your arm.
So it's getting pretty developed, right? If you ever see Devin Lounge pronator, it looks like a tumor. His thing is so developed. It's bulging.
Is Devin the
Canadian, tall, with the T-Rex arms from all the elbow trauma.
Yeah.
For decades of arm wrestling. So your pronation, by far, the most important part of arm wrestling. Also, having a strong pronation arm wrestling lets you bypass all of that pain usually associated with the sport. So when you get turned up like this, you're all on your bicep, right? And if you're trying to go to the side like this with your bicep turned up, with your knuckles start with your palm facing the ceiling, all that pressure on your elbow, and your bicep brachialis, right? But when you have your pronation engaged, it allows you to use more of this chain, like your shoulders, your chest, your back, right? That chain is rock solid when you're here, right? When you're this way. But when you're here, you're vulnerable, right? Mm. You're very weak from this position. So there's a lot of muscles you need to train arm wrestling. Like, there is, for example, your wrist flexion, your finger containment strength, there's your wrist rise, the jerk off muscle. I mean, there is so many different little muscles in your forearm, besides, you know, of course, learning proper technique, that you need to train individually for you to be an elite level arm wrestler.
So what else? Do you need to throw your body into it as well?
Exactly. Everything needs to be, think of it as like isometric wrestling, right? You're not trying to move any muscle individually. You're trying to move everything once contracted in one unit, right? So your arm is moving with your body.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what is your left side good, or is that a big imbalance?
No, my left side's great. So a lot of arm wrestlers just, Devin would call it, have like the pumpkin method, where they train just one arm. You know, I like to train both because I don't want to be walking around with a Popeye arm. And then the other arm is like half the size. It looked a bit weird. Yeah. So I train both just for symmetry because I do care a little about aesthetics. But it's not unusual for arm wrestlers to have a freakishly big forearm and then one arm that's half the size of it because they don't train it. Because everyone cares about your right arm. And an arm wrestling your left arm is very important.
We good? Yeah. Who, in your opinion, is the GOAT of arm wrestling currently?
Currently, Levon Sagers Finley. I'm telling you the last name wrong. His name is Levon.
Yeah.
And he's like 185 kg Georgian behemoth. Mm-hmm. And he hasn't lost a single round in arm wrestling for 4 years, which is a big deal because in an arm wrestling super match, you have 6 rounds per match. He hasn't lost one. So he's pretty much unbeatable. And anyone who has attempted to beat him looks like he just started yesterday.
Yeah.
No one's even close. Devin just tried his hand at LeBron. Wasn't even close. He's just ascended above and beyond. No one understands why he's so strong.
Yeah, I was going to say, is this how?
This is what the community is trying to figure out. I don't know how. He's definitely taking something that no one else knows about because his voice is like 10 pitches lower than any voice. You know the voice modulator that they have in interviews? That like the yeah. Yeah, it's like that.
When interview drug dealers.
Yeah. That's his voice all the time.
No way. So what, obviously you've done the arm wrestling. In terms of the other like big lifts and PRs that you've done, what is your... sort of your best PR with the bench, the squat, the deadlift?
Well, the one that got me most hype was when I was, don't know how old I was actually, forgetting now, but I was doing a raw lift. So just a belt and chalk, no straps, no suit. And I did 410 kg. And
how many reps?
Just one rep.
Just one, yeah.
It was one rep. That's the first time I ever did that weight. And it was a huge PR. It was, I think, like a 15 or 20 kg PR from my previous best. And it was just a huge milestone number, that 410 kg, 900 pounds.
So, so heavy.
Yeah. And it was so satisfying because I had no equipment, just my belt on, straps or nothing. And I remember I was so... there's just a huge rush of adrenaline.
Mm. Oh, you can see that after you do the lift and throw your belt. The world's most abused belt.
Oh, yeah.
In the fitness community.
Yes, yes. My belt's going to sue me one day for all the abuse I give it. And that got me more hype than any other lift in the world. I've had some hype lifts, for sure, but that was the most hype.
But why did you decide to do no straps? Just because it's more badass?
It was more badass, sure, but also in competition, you can't use straps.
Oh, so it was a competition?
It was outside competition leading up to it.
Okay.
So a month prior to competition powerlifting, you'll test where you're at. So your coach, or if you're doing it yourself, you have an idea of where you're going to lift, what you can lift in competition. Mm. And that was that time in training. I was like a month out, 3 weeks out. Okay, like coach is like, okay, test one around. Let's see where you're at. So I did. And I had to use no straps because it's not allowed. Yeah. So you got to train how you play.
So this competition that you were prepping for, was it literally like a deadlifting competition or was it an all-round?
It was all-round. It was squat, bench, and deadlift.
Okay. Has it got a name, that competition?
Yeah, it's just like RPS. So it's like Revolution Powerlifting Syndicate. That's the federation. Mm-hmm. It's like a subdivision of powerlifting competitions. There's like IPF, there's USAPL, there's USPA. There's so many different powerlifting federations that host competitions with various different rules. But in none of them, you can use straps.
Mm-hmm. And it's the three main lifts.
Exactly. But in all of them, squat, bench, and deadlift. You can choose to do only one lift if you want. But my records are with all three put together, that creates a total. I have the record for the total, all three combined.
Did anyone even come close? Is it done in like body weight categories as well?
That's right, yeah. So there's like, 110 kg, 125, 140 kg, super heavyweight category.
Mm-hmm. So everybody wants to get stronger and improve their performance doing those big three. So right. what does your training look like in the lead up to a competition like that? I assume you're not doing hardly anything else. It's literally just those lifts again and again and again. Maybe
exactly.
Some like accessory exercises to help.
Yeah, I mean, 2 months out, 3 months out, I'll be doing lots of accessories. But a month out and under, I'm just doing, as you said, squat, bench, deadlift, one accessory, like a belt squat, for example, for the squat deadlift accessory. And for bench, I literally just do bench and that's it. And that's what's giving me the most results. But that's only a month out, with just a couple weeks of training left.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Most of the training before that is with lots of accessories.
Yeah. And I'd imagine you got to be eating quite a lot.
Well,
because I remember there was one time when I think we did a video and you were telling me what you were eating and you were on some absurd, like it was like a strongman diet. Like you were packing the calories in. What was that for?
That was for
you were literally
a competition.
Eating ice cream.
Yes.
Like
ice
tubs
cream.
Of ice cream.
Yes. I would literally put in a, not a liter, but it was a tub of ice cream in every single protein shake. So it would be an ice cream protein shake three times a day, in addition to six meals, of which were absolute junk and garbage, like pizza, burger, fries, sweets, all kind of nasty shit. So I had to get to 10K calories per day.
10,000 calories a day.
Did that for about...
Oh, my God. Because I've done the 10,000 calorie challenge, so I know what 10,000 calories is.
Yes. It's just nonstop eating all day long, nonstop, and shitting. Lots of shitting, too.
Yeah.
Farting, of course.
What the hell? Every day for how long?
I did it for 3 weeks. That's all I can tolerate, right? I would love to have did it longer, just to see how big I can get, how strong I would get, because... In powerlifting, your squat and bench goes up as your weight does, right? More calories, you get a bigger lift. It's always worked for me that way. Now that I'm down quite a bit in weight, okay, let's compare like my 110 kg lift to my 135 kg lift. Mm-hmm. So I can only compare in pounds. So in pounds, I benched 573 at 110. And at 135 kg body weight, I benched 645. So nearly 100 pounds more. Mm-hmm. That's nearly a 10% increase.
But I guess that comes at a cost of your overall fitness, though.
Yeah, I mean, I was a disgusting creature, dude. I remember, okay, at 135, I was in the mall, Dubai Mall. You know, it's a big-ass mall. No, I was in Mall of Emirates. And after, from like the parking lot to, I think, the cinema, and I parked in the cinema parking, it was like a five-minute walk. I had to take a break. I had to hold my hand on the handrail, you know, and take a break. I was out of breath. Just walking from the parking lot to the cinema. I didn't even make it to the cinema. I had a rest along the way.
A snack.
I'm not even exaggerating. It was terrible, terrible. I did not wish that on anyone. It was absolute the worst fitness I could think of for anyone. It produced results. My numbers did go up.
But did it have to be junk food, though?
Well, to eat 10K calories and it I not be junk food, it's just the volume of food is...
Because
I couldn't get that down.
I'm trying to think if there is even a way to do that clean.
Well, a lot of that food I was eating wasn't being digested, right? So one can argue, and I would say it's definitely a better way to go about it. Eat 5K, but with clean food so that you can digest. But even 5K a day of just straight clean food, a ton of food. And
it's a lot more volume.
Yeah.
It's harder to find the clean, calorie-dense foods, which... Actually tasty.
Yeah. I mean, you can add some sauce, make it wet and all that, but it's so much fun. And will you digest 5,000 calories of just straight chicken and rice anyways? Your body doesn't need that much.
Yeah.
You know, right now I'm on 2,000 a day, right? And I just eat when I'm hungry. And I can, if I eat more than I'm eating right now, if I eat beyond my appetite, I'm going to the bathroom more. So I'm like, how much of that am I actually digesting?
Mm.
You know?
So, okay. So what's like an average day now? Are you prepping for anything at the moment?
No, just prepping for a mock meet. So a mock meet is just something I want to do to compare my TRT lifts versus my PED lifts at this body weight.
Okay.
And we've done to a competition standard with competition plates over at Desert Barbell. And I'm roughly 115 right now. I wanted to compare my lifts now to when I was 110 on PEDs and see the difference.
Do you think that'll psychologically mess with your head a bit? Like just knowing that you're so much weaker than you're... I mean, you're healthier, but... Do you think you'd be able to pull anything close to what you were doing?
There'll be like a 10 to 15% difference, I think.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah, it won't be like a 50%. No. Because I'm already only 2 weeks out and I'm under 10% of my lifts I did when I was on PEDs at this body weight.
Okay.
And I'm content with that because, see, what I want to know again is what I can build from on TRT. Will I keep doing this or will I stop somewhere and then start doing this but slowly?
Yeah.
Because again, I'm after longevity. And, you know, when I was smashing PRs and world records, that was not bringing me any income. It was bringing me some followers. You know, I was getting some recognition, but it's not making you any money. It's not a lucrative sport. Right?
Yeah.
So,
well, that's why I have no interest in competing. It's just like, it's so much time, effort, and energy. And what is the reward? Unless you're getting like number one Olympia.
Yes. And you have T-Bum or Heidi Huben right now, you're living life. You're living pretty good. But unless you're number one, right?
Yeah.
What about everyone else?
Yeah. Because even some people were like, oh, yeah, but if you compete, you'll get like really good exposure. And I'm like, no, you won't. You're better off just making YouTube videos.
Exactly. You get just as much exposure, if not more. If you focus your efforts on getting exposure, that will be more you'll have more success than trying to get the exposure from competing.
Yeah.
Right.
I've seen it with so many people in the industry when they, I met a few people, this was back in the day at expos, and you could just tell they were just obsessed about becoming known, and they've done everything in their power to be somebody, to have the followers. They figured out a way. There is always a way. One way is obviously you have to be extremely consistent with the posting,
right,
getting yourself in shape, or like something that stands out. That's right, obviously really good. And then, you know, just getting yourself in there, collaborating with people, traveling, you know, that's, I feel like I'm long overdue a trip to the States, because there's a lot of people I want to collaborate with. And even just, you know, if you get in their videos, if you get in their pictures, their stories, everything, it just, you notice the followers go up a lot.
Absolutely.
And I imagine that's helped. I mean, obviously, you've helped people to put them on the map, but there's also some big names who you've collaborated with. You know, you've been training with like Ronnie Coleman. Yeah. Pretty much, I'm trying to think, like, you've collaborated with like nearly everyone in the fitness industry, at least. Like, you've ticked off all the boxes.
There's still a few, believe it or not. I can think of dozens actually that I haven't. I mean, there's like Big Ramy, I haven't collaborated with him. There's Sebum, yeah. There's Phil Heath.
You don't do anything with Sebum?
Never. No. We actually worked for MHP years and years ago. And that was the closest I ever got to a collab with him. We were working at the same booth.
Yeah.
Wearing the same shirt, but didn't get a video in. Got a photo in, that was it.
I'm surprised about Big Ramy, because he's always in Benus Gym, isn't he? But he...
booked and busy. He's always booked and busy.
He doesn't collab with anyone, does he? He can't speak very good English.
He does speak good English. Okay. Yeah. It's just, I guess there's not much incentive for him, because he's not making that a priority. His revenue streams don't depend on his social media following, I think.
Yeah, but I would have thought, like, at least he could be selective and do collabs with like you. I threw my shot out there. I spoke to who's right hand man.
I'm forgetting now, but him
got absolutely pied and ignored.
Oh wow! You miss all the shots you don't take.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, if you want to collaborate with someone, try.
Absolutely. Right?
You might not get a response, but you know, maybe, you know, they're going to read it and they might want to do a collaboration. Yeah, usually I think if you have something to offer.
Yes, 100%.
It's hard to be, if you're an absolute nobody and you're like, oh, hey, Larry, do you want to do a workout video? And you'd be like, well. I imagine that happens a lot.
Exactly.
You've had to turn people down.
Yeah, it doesn't come too often. I think most people assume that I would say no. Mm. But as long as there's someone with some like extraordinary ability, they're talented, I'm definitely open to it if they don't even have a big following. But if, you know, they're just starting out in their lifting career and they have no following, I'm not as keen, you know?
Yeah.
Because my platform is valuable too, and I like to be mutually beneficial.
Mm-hmm. Well, people want to see good content, interesting content.
Exactly.
And if you're collaborating with someone who is like, I mean, maybe they don't have to have like the best physique, but if they've got like a really amazing personality, then
yeah, that makes a difference too. Yeah, I consider that a talent.
Yeah.
You know, some people are just really well spoken and they have a way with words. They just have some, like Jesse James.
Oh, right? Yeah.
He has amazing charisma, right? You can go anywhere and make anything entertaining.
Very quickly, guys, I just want to ask you a quick question. Are you taking supplements? And if you are, do you have any idea if you're taking the right supplements in the right amounts? You see, the more that I discovered about the importance of micronutrient supplementation and the adverse health effects of micronutrient deficiencies, I would constantly ask myself the same thing. I would go into supplement stores, load up on bottles of micronutrients and pop pills daily without really knowing if they were doing me any good or not. That's when I decided to try out Bionic. Since 2021, I've been getting my blood work done with them every 3 to 4 months. Once the blood test has been analyzed, they would put together a customized micronutrient formula tailored specifically for me. And this would last me for 3 to 4 months until I got my blood work done again. And since then, I've honestly never looked back. If you are also serious about performing at your best, preventing development of diseases and maximizing your overall health and well-being, I highly recommend you give it a try. And they've recently introduced Bionic Go, which is a fraction of the price, where all you need to do is just fill in a questionnaire online without the need of a blood test. If you want to find out more, or give them a try, head over to bionic.com, but you can use my exclusive referral code BQMikeThurston for a discount on your first order. Let's get back to the episode.
Yeah, I had him on the podcast and we did a few bits for one of his videos, and just watching him work is like crazy. Like, he has no fear. He's like, in there, like constantly just bringing the energy is crazy.
It doesn't go off. Like, how do we get energy like that? How do we do it?
Yeah, like we're not the type of people to do that kind of thing. Maybe you could force yourself to do it, but it's certainly not something I would naturally do.
Definitely.
So at the moment, with you're pretty much, you've got all the platforms covered, social media platforms. You recently hopped on Snapchat.
That's right. Just got verified, lucky me. And I don't see how anyone is growing on there. It's nothing on my spotlight goes viral, even over 100 views. It seems like impossible.
I've seen some people, they're doing well on there, but I think they were early adapters. And they're even getting like hundreds of dollars a day just from ads popping up on their stories. And then there's some people who are doing like the series, Snapchat series, that are getting paid pretty well for that.
Yeah. And that's what made me want to jump on. I'm like, there's a marketing opportunity here. Let me hop on there and explore it. But
yeah. Which is the one that pays off most for you? Is it YouTube?
It is YouTube. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just an ad revenue.
Well, how does that work with the setup you've got? It's you, it's Adam. Does he get a cut of the ad revenue or do you pay him salary?
I give him a salary.
Yeah.
He just wants to be taken care of, have something consistent, you know? Mm-hmm. And YouTube ad revenue generally has been very consistent over the years. We have our highs and lows, but our lowest low generally doesn't dip below that.
Yeah.
Like we have like a bottom low that we haven't seen it go below that.
What was the video that's provided you with the most ad revenue?
The arm wrestling video with me arm wrestling 5 bodybuilders at training stuff and paying them off at the end.
Right, how many videos, how many views did that get?
Like 230 million. And
whoa. Yeah.
That paid like 40 grand in ad revenue. I've made a video about how much it paid me because it had so many views. I'm sure people want to know. It was only a 50-second video as well.
Wow. Yeah, and there's no guarantee that things like that are going to pop off. Yeah. But YouTube will sometimes suggest
those videos. I'll throw you a bone every now and again.
So as it stands, you don't have to get into the numbers, but I'm curious to know, you have the AdSense coming in from YouTube. Mm-hmm. You have your merch, which is the clothing and the accessories. Mm-hmm. What else?
Right. Okay, we said the clothing, the accessories. We said AdSense. Having a brain for it right now.
That pea brain is kicking in. Exactly. Working overtime.
Yeah. It's shrinking. It's getting even smaller. So I have Boohoo Man, the clothing sponsor. Mm-hmm. Let's see. I just started Facebook ad revenue, but that's minuscule right now. I almost feel like going in my bio and seeing exactly
that link tree.
Yeah, I gotta go my link tree and see what I have going on right now.
A lot of it is still pretty reliant upon you being active on social media. Like, if you went off social media, you're fucked, like me.
Exactly. And that's what I mean, there's pros and cons with every career, right? Mm. And while this is, you know, high risk, it's also, high reward, high risk. And that being, if you become irrelevant one day with your content tanking for whatever reason or cancel culture, then what do you do, right? And then to finish that other segment we just had, like, yeah, I have training programs, I have an app as well. But most of that cash flow is coming from my merchandise. And that's the thing, like, when you create something, you're going to see the most rewards from that, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure with you as well, like, with your merchandise, it's probably what pays you the most.
Yeah.
I'm just assuming here. It is?
Yeah. It's definitely, especially in the past year. And it's crazy. I think if because a lot of people, they always have this sort of dream or idea where they're like, oh, I'm going to start a clothing company. But they have like 1,000 followers. And I'm like, that's probably not the best thing for you to do at this stage. Unless you're like a wizard and you're like really passionate about the clothing, the process, and you would start from the bottom and grow up. It's difficult. I honestly thought it would be easier when I first started. I just assumed like, oh yeah, everybody's going to buy the shorts. But like there was a certain way I had to market it. I had to be more regular with talking about it. Sure. And I almost, I had to kind of separate the clothing brand from my brand. Because it started off with like, oh yeah, Mike's shorts.
Right.
But now it's kind of got its own sort of feel, storyline and so on. And now I'm trying to get other people to model the shorts themselves. Brought out bikinis recently, so it's doing good. Yeah. Do you feel like when you're promoting Boohoo, does that get in the way of pushing your own brand at all?
Not necessarily, because the PR, our top sellers are the lifting accessories.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we don't. I don't even wear the PR clothing anymore because I'm actually in the process of separating with my current partners over at PR, taking the brand for myself, which they said that they had no problem with, and I'm going to be revamping all the clothing. Then at that time, maybe Boohoo and I may not make so much sense anymore because I'll be trying to push my own clothing. But at this very time, I'm not even wearing PR clothes, right? Because I don't like the way they're made. I don't like the designs. I want all that to be redone. I don't want to promote that. I don't
Great
want
that. Sales plug there.
Yeah, fair enough. No, but see, that's my thing. I'm always been going to be honest with you guys. And, you know, it's not great. The clothes
are
great.
I noticed if I'm not personally comfortable with wearing them on a regular basis, then something isn't right. Like, I need to fix it. Like, I had a few, like, tracksuits made, and they were samples, and I wore them for a bit, and I was like, no, these are trash. And I'm like, I can't sell these if I wouldn't actually wear them myself. I like to promote something I'm happy with wearing. That's why I love my shorts, so it's so easy to try and plug them and push them, because I genuinely like them and wear them every day. So it's really good. You have something else as well, which is coming out soon, shortly. I don't know if we talk about it.
That's right. Yeah? Larry's Liquid, yeah.
Larry's Liquid.
I have Liquid Chalk. Actually, that may be launching.
No, but there's another thing as well.
Oh,
was that sauce?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, low-calorie sauce, yes.
Yeah, so you got loads of things coming out.
Yeah, see, exactly. So I got Liquid Chalk that's dropping this week. I got low-calorie sauce that's already created. And we were and are going to, I say were because maybe we're going to shift those plans to US, but we're in the middle of it right now. Push it here in the Middle East market and have it in some retail stores, some gyms, and go the Amazon route with having it distributed. But in the US, we'll have an easier time because we have the right connections to distribute in the US. So we're looking forward to pumping that in the market because, frankly, there is no competition there when it comes to influencers with low-calorie sauce. I don't see anyone promoting low-calorie sauce, right? But you see everyone with clothing and accessories.
And energy drinks as well.
Energy drinks, exactly. But that could be said because, well, there's a demand for these things. Is there a demand for low-calorie sauce?
No, I think there is.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and it's one of those things which, you know, people will use it and then they like it. They want to get more. They'll keep making those repeat purchases. The problem I've noticed sometimes, like, especially with men when it comes to buying swim shorts, usually men need one or two pairs of swim shorts and they're good. They're going to wear them until there's a frigging hole in the crotch. And then they'll be like, oh, well, maybe it's time I get another pair. But with like the sauces and stuff, like that's something which people are going to buy on a regular basis. So that could be a very good moneymaker.
Exactly. As with the Liquid Chalk.
Yeah.
But you run out after a month or two and you need more. You know, we're going to have a subscription program where you get a new one sent every month.
Yeah.
So there's that. And I'm also... I have a couple more things I can't talk about right now, but yeah, I have a few things in the works. I'm trying to create products and services that doesn't depend on my success on social media.
Yeah, right? That's smart.
You know, that's how you create wealth. And when I'm buying, after I'm done buying my first property in LA in a couple months, I'm looking to put a large portion of my savings in real estate. I think it's a safe way to create generational wealth, something to pass on to your children, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm looking to take on that avenue. And I mean, it seems to work for everyone.
Yeah.
In real estate, so.
I suppose now is a better time than it was a couple of years ago. But I have absolutely no idea what I'm talking about.
It's not the best time, actually. Yeah, it's not a great time to buy.
Is it not?
No. Prices are much higher than during the pandemic. A couple years ago was the right time to buy because prices crashed. No one was buying. No one was spending money because people were out of work.
Yeah.
But now, yeah, prices are up. But
what are you doing, like, to educate yourself on real estate?
YouTube.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, there's so much information on YouTube. There's so much, right? And there's... Once I get in that bubble of home buyers and real estate investors in LA, I'll have some mentorships, I'm sure, and I'll have friends that are also investing. And, like, you know, once you start a new craft, you attract other people who are also doing the same thing. And it's just through experience, trial and error, that I'll get better.
Wow. Imagine 5 years' time, you're doing, instead of the lifting videos, doing crazy PRs, you're doing, like, home makeovers. Yeah. Larry's home makeover show.
That does ring to it. Yeah, let's see where that takes me.
What is the goal? It's, 5 years' time, well, you'd be 32. You'd be same age as me. Is that right?
Yeah.
No, 33. Mm-hmm. What? How do you see your life at 33 years old?
I look to acquire 2 to 3 rental properties by each year and create passive income by getting the rental money from the tenants. I don't want to flip houses. That's bigger money, but bigger risk. I want to take on a low risk investment that will pay me passively. For example, 200K property will give me roughly $1,500 a month in rent without lifting a finger. And I want to pay this property in cash, so I have not to worry about any of the interest rates or anything like that. You know, just be all profit. And if I acquire two or three properties a month, a year, in 10 years' time, I'll be able to have enough passive income to sustain my current lifestyle. Mm. Because what I don't want to do is, as I keep creating more income and revenue, I don't want to keep upgrading my lifestyle. Otherwise, yeah, I'll never have money in the reserve or create wealth. So I do need, I think at this point, this is where I need to stop. Like stop, okay, buying more and more expensive cars and, you know, yes, getting...
That's the problem about living in Dubai.
Yes.
I don't know what it's like in LA, but certainly here, like you can't compete with everyone. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah. You keep up with the Joneses, right? And the thing is that they don't have... See, you just can't compare yourself to others, especially financially. You don't know what their finances look like. Maybe they're telling you one thing, but really it's another. So you can only compare with yourself. And that's where I've been struggling in Dubai, is I keep getting caught up with, well, what other people are doing here, how they're spending their money, not having a clue how much money they really have, how much income they really have compared to myself. And that, again, that upgrading your lifestyle as my income increases, that needs to stop so I can really create wealth. Because this is the best time in our lives, you as well, when we're in the spotlight, you know, we're still relevant, we're making great money doing what we do and doing what we love. This is the time now to create wealth, mm-hmm. right? Who knows what it's going to be like in 10 years with social media and selling merchandise, making videos. It's probably not going to be the same. That's a long time.
Yeah.
So I want to take advantage of the opportunity while I can, and not be that statistic of like 70-something percent of athletes after they retire go broke. You know,
yeah.
I don't want to be part of that statistic.
Yeah.
And I do consider myself an athlete, as my background is powerlifting, lifting in general. So I want to make it a point to secure my future and my kids.
You're going to take the car with you?
Hell no. Yeah.
No. You got a Ferrari at the moment?
Nothing now. Yeah.
Oh, really?
All gone. Yeah. Nothing.
Oh.
Yeah. All going into the property.
No way.
All going into the property.
You're a big car head, aren't you?
I am. And it is tough to give that up. But, you know, I've had my fun.
Well, so what's the dream car when you go to LA?
That's the thing, though. I've had fun with all the cars. I've had McLaren. I had Ferrari. I had Lamborghini. I had the best. I had all of them, you know, except for like the hypercars over like 300-400K. I haven't had those. But... it's just I've had so much fun with cars here in Dubai because, for one, they're easy to rent, they're easy to acquire, easy to buy.
The roads are good here.
Roads are good here, aside from the speed cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
So it's lost that, you know, pizzazz, you know, that I had when I first came to Dubai. Like, mm. I play with them so much that they don't give me that same excitement and fulfillment anymore. But when I go to LA, I want to get the new Lucid Air Sapphire when that comes out. It's an 8-second electric car. Quarter mile, 8 second, and it's going to even beat the Plaid. Plus, it's a luxury car as well. Got a luxury interior, and like Teslas. I'm all about EVs now. I want the fast EV money can buy, but that will come later on. As I said, I'm putting my money in my property now, my forever home, and then after that, I look to acquire some rental properties and, you know, maybe play with some cars a little bit. But
you think you'll get into acting?
I think if I pursue it, I can have success with it, but. That's not where I really see myself. I've been saying it over the years, like, yeah, acting. But I'm like, do I want to be an actor?
Yeah. People say that to me, and I'm like, I don't know if I'd enjoy it.
That's the thing. I don't have any passion for acting. I don't know that for certain. I haven't tried it, but I don't see myself being, at this very moment, my mentality currently, having any income with acting, aside from the money. But see, that's the thing I was saying earlier, is that if you're not passionate about what you do, you'll never get that far.
Yeah.
You won't push yourself far enough.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel I'll be with acting. I'll like do it half-assed. I won't go to all the auditions I need to go to. I won't put enough love and effort into it because I don't really care to be an actor, right? So,
no, you're definitely on the right path with everything you're doing at the moment. So, I'm excited to see what happens when you go to LA and the people you'll meet. And I guess it's another reason for me to go over and check it out.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome, man.
Definitely.
So, everyone can find you, obviously, type in Larry Wheels on pretty much every single social media platform. And
literally all of them.
They'll be able to find you.
Yeah, except for Twitter. And I'm on Twitter.
Yeah, neither do I.
I don't tweet.
Awesome, man. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.